I'm recording here. The medrash that was supposed to be included in our last class, previous class in the series, when we discussed umikol hachai mikol basar, what is it that's included as chai, as living, that is not basar, that is not flesh. We didn't get to it during the class, and because that was the last session of the year, we left off a piece of the medrash. So I'd like to revisit this medrash and see parts B and C. Again, we're in Bereishis Rabba, Lamed Aleph Yud Ches 31:18. We're commenting on the pasuk in Bereishis, the sentence, chapter 6, sentence 19. If you take a look at source number 1 on your sheet, the pasuk says, "Umikol hachai mikol basar, from all the living, from all flesh, shnayim mikol tavil hateva lahachayos itach. You shall bring two of all to the boat." To give life, to give it life with you, to keep it alive with you. Zachar unikeva yehiu, male and female they should be. So the second part of the medrash, I think, is seizing upon the word mikol, to from everything. But what it does in order to solve the problem is to bring a medrash that's on something else entirely. We've seen that repeatedly this year, where a medrash that's on a completely different pasuk is brought in because it relates to the subject at hand. So here, what we're going to bring as a commentary on an explanation of the words shnayim mikol, two of everything, is actually a medrash on a pasuk in Iyov. The pasuk, the sentence that we're commenting on, is Iyov Perek Lamed Tet Pasuk Yud, chapter 39, sentence 10. If you take a look on the sheet at source number 11, you'll see the psukim. This, in context, is part of a description of the wonders of God compared to the limits of the human being. This is the very end of Iyov, when after the whole conversation between Iyov and his various friends who have shown up, we get a section that describes how great Hashem is, the power that Hashem has versus the limitations on the powers of a human being. So, this particular section is talking about Hashem's control over the great creatures of the natural world. Source number 11. Hayoveh reim avdecha im yalin al avusecha. Will the reim is written in Hebrew, resh yud mem, usually re'im, and we take it as re'im is written resh aleph mem, but no one really makes a distinction between them. We assume reim and re'im are the same for our purposes. So, will the re'im, a certain beast we'll talk about more in a moment, will the re'im serve you? Im yalin al avusecha, will it rest by your trough? Can you tame the re'im, in other words? Are you able to control the re'im such that it will serve you, such that it will stay by your trough to eat? Hatikshor reim betelem avoso. Could you tie the cord of the re'im? Avot is a cord. Will you tie the avot of the re'im to the telem, to the furrow? Will you tie the cord, the leash of the re'im, to the furrow? In other words, can you make him plow for you? Im yisadeid amakim acharecha. Will he plow the valleys behind you? The word lisadeid is an odd word. It also shows up in Yeshaya, chapter 28, sentence 24. It means to work the ground, to plow it. So, will the re'im serve you? Will it eat from your trough? Can you tie it to the plow so that it will pull the plow? Pasuk Yud Aleph, sentence 11. Hatiftach bo, ki rav kocho, will you trust him in his great strength? V'ta'azov elav yigi'echa, and leave him your labor, trusting him with the growth of your field. Hata'amin bo, ki yashiv zarecha v'gornecha ye'esof, will you trust him to bring in your seed, to gather your granary? Those are the psukim. So this passage here describes Hashem's power over the re'im by describing human powerlessness over the re'im. Of course, we haven't actually said what a re'im is. All we've indicated is that it's something that human beings don't normally control, but that Hashem controls. So we generally understand that a re'im is a huge, horned animal, and it is a kosher animal. Also worth noting, the Dishon is listed in the list of kosher animals in Parsha Shmini, and we understand that the Dishon is the Re'im. The Tosfos in Zvachim Kufyut Gimel Amad Aleph notes that the Re'im is a kosher creature. So we have this very large, horned animal, capable of pulling a plow, but human, he's not pulling the plow for you. You can't tame the Re'im, and it's supposed to be very, very large. We have Midrashim elsewhere that talk about the range of creatures, and it talks about from the eggs of lice all the way to the great Re'im. The Re'im being this oversized creature. So he's saying here, you don't control the Re'im, Hashem controls the Re'im. That's the pasuk in Iyov Lamed Tet, the sentence in Job chapter 39. So what does this pasuk mean? What does this set of psukim mean? On a very simple and straightforward level, it's not saying that God has actually ever used the Re'im to plow, versus the human being who can't do so. It's simply saying the human being can only harness small creatures and is limited in what he's able to do. That would be the simple and straightforward read of these sentences and needs no further real explanation. Alternatively, if you do want to say that God has plowed the world with a Re'im, maybe before human beings cultivated, Hashem plowed the world so that things would grow and he used the Re'im to do so. I suppose you could suggest that as well. But our Medrash looks at it in a different way. Our Medrash does indeed assume that when we turn to the human being and say, well, have you plowed with a Re'im? We believe that Hashem plowed with a Re'im. But when? God doesn't plow the earth? At the Mabul, at the floods. So take a look now at source number 12, please, and you'll see our Medrash. Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah have a debate. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Re'ein lo nichnas imo, aval gurav nichnasu. Rabbi Yehuda says the Re'ein did not enter the boat, but the young of the Re'ein entered the boat. There was no room for a big Re'ein. Perhaps it would also be dangerous to bring a big Re'ein on the boat. So instead, you get the small mini Re'ein enters the boat. The little kids, the little Re'ein children enter the boat. Remember, if they're kosher animals, you need 7 of them, perhaps even 14 of them. So we get little Re'ein creatures running around on the boat. Rabbi Nechemiah, Amar, lo hu velo gurav. Rabbi Nechemiah disagrees. He says neither the Re'ein nor the young of the Re'ein entered the boat. Well, then how did they survive the flood? Ella, kesharo Noach bateva. Noach tied the Re'ein to the boat. V'haya maslim talmios, and it made furrows, meaning in the water. It made furrows, kemo tiberia lesusita, like from Tiberia, Tiberius to Susita. Susita today, there is something on the Kinneret called Susita Beach, which makes sense because Tiberia is also by the Kinneret. So there are furrows in the water from this Re'im, like from one area on the Kinneret to the other. And they quote our sentence from Iyov, Hatikshor Re'im b'telem avoso, emi shadeira makim acharecha, will you tie the Re'im, will you tie the cord of the Re'im to the furrow and have it plow the depths after you? So Rabbi Nechemiah says the Re'im actually is tied onto the boat. Now, separately, we've had a discussion about Og hanging onto the boat for reasons that we already discussed in a previous class. Now, apparently, you have the Re'im also hanging on outside of the boat. So again, what is this Medrash doing? Before we see the last line of the Medrash, what this Medrash is trying to accomplish really is to explain Iyov chapter 39 and the fact that Hashem chooses as an illustration of divine power versus human power to say, well, you can't plow with the Re'im. And our Medrash is asking, well, Hashem, when did you plow with the Re'im? To which our Medrash is answering, Hashem tied it to the boat and it made furrows as though it was plowing. That's the idea that's being expressed. It's borrowed here, I think, because our pasuk, our sentence back in source number 1, says, Shnayim mikol, two of everything you shall bring. And what this Medrash says is, well, not everything actually went into the boat. Two of everything, tavi el hateva, you shall bring to the boat, lahayos itach, to give it life with you. So not everything is going into the boat. I suppose, just thinking about it now, maybe it's also because the pasuk says, tavi el hateva, you shall bring to the boat, suggests that not everything is actually going inside. So maybe the pasuk itself is hinting that something is going to remain outside? Could be. Could be that that's what it's doing here. It would be good if we were doing this with the class, because then we'd have everybody commenting and we'd all come out wiser. But you're stuck with just listening to me. But I suspect maybe that that's actually it. Maybe it's not just commenting on Shnayim Mikol, two of everything, and saying, well, not really everything is going in. But maybe it's also commenting on Tavi El HaTeva, you should bring it to the boat, but not inside, because not everything actually goes inside. The closing line of our Medrash, going back again to source number 12, I don't really have much to say about it. It's just a tangential note regarding the might, the fearsome might of this this creature, the Re'im. Bimei Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Ola Gura Echol Eretz Yisrael. In the days of Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, a young Re'im entered or came to, or ascended to, Israel. Gura here is the young of the Re'im, based on the context, even though we also use the word gur to refer to a young lion. Okay. So a young Re'im ascended to Israel. V'lo hiniach ilan ad sha'a karo. It did not leave a single tree in the ground. It uprooted every tree it encountered. V'asu tanis, they fasted, v'hispalo Rabbi Chiya, and Rabbi Chiya davened. Rabbi Chiya, the great sage from the right after the period of the Mishnah, middle of the 3rd century. The Gos Imo min Hamidbar, its mother called to it from the wilderness. The Yara Lekola, and it descended to her voice. It went to be with its mother. So, I'm not really clear on what this is adding, other than, again, a demonstration of the scariness of these mighty Re'im creatures. Okay. The goal of this Medrash, this piece here of Yudches Beis 18b, is fundamentally, again, to explain the image of God plowing in Iyov. And it's imported here as Noach loads the boat, explaining our pasuk and explaining along the way how the Re'im survives the mabul, survives the flood. Okay, that is 18b. Next, we get the last part of our Medrash. I was really glad not to have to do this part in person, because I could see where this one could get ugly. Nonetheless, here we go. If you take a look at your sheet, it's picking up on the last words in the pasuk. The last words in the sentence, God says to bring two of all kinds, Zachar u'nekeva yehiu, male and female they should be. So the Medrash says, Zachar u'nekeva yehiu, male and female they should be. We're in source 13. Im ra'isa zachar ratz achar nekeva kablayhu. If you see a male running after a female, pursuing the female, accept it. Nikeva ratza achar zachar. But if what you see is the female running after the male, al tekabel. If the female is pursuing the male, don't accept that onto the boat. What in the world are you talking about? Where did this come from? What is the message? That's a really good question. So, first of all, what it seems to be saying is that the male, what it seems to be saying is that Noach is only to accept species, or to expect to examples of species, to accept particular animals, if the male pursues the female. That's what's supposed to happen. If the female is pursuing a male, that displays some kind of a trait that is not desirable. So before we get to why this trait wouldn't be desirable, I want to ask, how did you get this from our pasuk? Where did this show up in Bereishit 6:19? I have seen some commentators who suggested that it came from the emphasis of Zachar Unikeva, because when it talks about loading the boat, not just in this pasuk, but in other places as well, it emphasizes Zachar Unikeva. So some suggest that the order is specific, male and then female. I have a problem with that, because it seems like in general, I think Zachar Unikeva is not an unusual way to word things. So that seems strange. Rather, I believe what it's picking up on is the word Yehiu, and I did find one edition of the Medrash, Medrash HaMavar, which indeed saw the same thing that I am seeing here. The word Yehiu. Yehiu literally means they shall be. You didn't need that word. The pasuk could have said, two from each you shall bring to the boat to give them life with you, male and female. Zachar and Keva. You didn't need the word Yehiu. If you're worried about sentence structure, it could have been Shnayim Mikol, Zachar and Keva, Tavi Ala Teva. You could have fit in the words male and female quite nicely without the word Yehiu. Yehiu means they shall be. And In the Gemara, we do have times when we take Yihyeh, or Yihyu, or Vihayu, as specific, as teaching me a particular lesson. If you take a look on your sheet, did I bring it here? Yes, source number 14. It's talking about the multiple offerings that are brought on a Yom Tov, on a holiday, and the Gemara there in source 14 says, "Uminayin shema akvin ze'ez ze'." How do you know that the various offerings of the day are me'akev each other, are requirements for each other, such that if even one is missing, the whole set is no good? How do you know that the entire set must be brought, or none of them should be brought? Tama lomar yihyu, because in that particular context, which I didn't bring here, but in that particular context, the biblical text says yihyu, that these offerings shall be. They shall be means they shall be thus, and then not in any different way. So when we say Zacharunu Keva Yehu, male and female, they shall be, it means specifically male and female they shall be. Male first and then female. In other words, the male pursuing the female. That's what our Medrash is saying. I believe it's picking up on Yehu. However, what are you talking about? Why male pursuing female? What is this about? So I think that what we're talking about, this sort of anti-Sadie Hawkins type of an approach, is seen in source number 15. Source number 15 is a midrash from earlier in Bereishis. Umipnei ma ha'ish toveya bi'isha, ve'ein ha'isha tova'as bi'ish, the midrash asks. Why is it that the man seeks the woman, and not vice versa? The woman doesn't seek the man. That in the normal course of things, says the Medrash, the man is the one who goes to find a bride. Now, is this always going to be so? Is this going to be true for every individual in every society? No, we know that that's not true. Nonetheless, the Medrash is describing a reality that is observed and saying, why does this happen? And Omar Lahen, these are students asking Rabbi Yoshua, so Rabbi Yoshua replies to them, Mashal lamaha davar domeh, to what may this be compared? La'echad sha'avad aveda, somebody who suffered a loss. So who mevakesh avedaso? Va'avedaso einah mevakashto. He goes to seek that which he has lost. His loss doesn't seek him. He goes looking for her. She doesn't go looking for him. What is the loss that we're talking about? So this goes back to the separation of Adam and Chava. Remember that we are taught about the creation of Adam and Chava twice within the Torah. In the first creation, in Perek Aleph, we're told that they are created as male and female. Then, in the second parak, in the second chapter, we are told that Hashem puts Adam to sleep, and then he separates Chava from Adam. He takes the tzela, the side of Adam, and splits it off. And as the Gemara explains it, initially, Adam and Chava are part of a single person. They're back to back. And then Hashem splits them apart, saying they should not be together. They should be separate beings who will then join their efforts together, the one opposite the other. Why that's so? There's a wealth of commentary on why that should be the preferred mode. But that's what's preferred. So the way that this Medrash looks at it is Adam is the one who has lost Chava. That the woman is the one who is taken away from the man. And I think the reason why that's the emphasis is simply the language in that second chapter in Bereishit. In this story of the separation of man and woman, Adam is, so to speak, the outward personality of the pair until then. When Hashem addresses them, it says he spoke to Adam. So Adam is the outward personality. When Chava is separated, therefore, we look at it as Chava being separated from Adam. Indeed, that's the way the story is presented in Perek Bet in Chapter 2. As I said, I'm very glad that I'm presenting this part of it just by audio, rather than live, because I can just see the bricks. But in any case, the idea here is that Adam is the one who has lost Chava, so he has suffered a loss. Whom evakesh avedaso? He goes to seek her, that which he has lost. She doesn't go to seek him. She's fine. It's him. He's the one who has suffered the loss. That's the way the Medrash looks at it. So the man is supposed to go looking for her. And if there's a reversal, it's making a value judgment. If there's a reversal and she goes looking for him, then something isn't right. Now that's a very interesting statement. The only thing that I could suggest to connect that to the Mabul, to the flood, and say that, well, Noah shouldn't take someone on board if they display this aberration, is, if you recall, when we discussed Hamas, the sin from before the flood, the sin that triggered the flood, there was aggressiveness as part of that, including in sexuality, as we've discussed. So Noah is being told to exclude those who are unusually aggressive. That seems to be what we're getting here in this third part of the Medrash. Zacharu nekeva yehu, male and female they should be, in the standard way. If you're seeing unusual sexual aggression, don't include them on the boat. Again, is this going to be true for every society, for every individual in every society? No. Afal pichein, nonetheless, this is what our Medrash is observing. What is the point of this piece of the Medrash? What is the goal? I think its goal is actually to take another shot at the sin of the before the flood, of the generation that suffered the flood, and to once again indict them for unusual aggression, and in particular sexual aggression. I think that's what this is trying to get across as it explains the word Yehu. So to summarize, the first medrash, which we saw when we did it in class, the first medrash was meant to explain textual redundancy, mikol ha'chaim, mikol basar, from all the living, from all flesh, as well as to explain how shadim, these odd spirits, survived the flood. Then, the second part is a medrash that's explaining the image of God plowing with the re'im in Eov, in Job chapter 39, and that medrash is imported here as Noah loads the boat, explaining this idea of bringing everything to the boat, but not necessarily inside the boat, and along the way explaining how the Re'im survived the flood. And then the third medrash explains the word Yehu, they shall be, and it's saying that this male and female, they shall be, is a comment on the sexual sin that went along, and the aggression that went along with the violence and the theft that we talked about in this pre-flood generation. We still have one more medrash that I want to see, so I want to record one more medrash, which is the last one within the parak, within the chapter. So, God willing, at some point in the next week or two, I will do that, and I will send out the email with the link.